VOA News, I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Trump is downplaying expectations for a second summit next week with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, but predicts it'll be a very exciting couple of days. He says North Korea can become an economic powerhouse eventually.
Their location between Russia, China, and South Korea is unbelievable. I think that North Korea and Chairman Kim have some very positive things in mind, and we'll soon find out.
He will meet Kim in Vietnam as a follow-up to their first summit in Singapore last summer. Mr. Trump also said he spoke with South Korean President Moon Jae-in on Tuesday about the upcoming talks. He will call Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe on Wednesday. President Trump says there is no magical date for reaching a trade deal with China, suggesting again the March 1st deadline for new tariffs could be put off. Mr. Trump had set the deadline for hiking tariffs on $200 million in Chinese imports from 10 to 25% if no trade deal or agreement is reached. Talks resumed Tuesday in Washington between lower-level deputies from each side before senior-level talks take over on Thursday. A new congressional report says that top White House officials pushed a multi-billion-dollar plan to build nuclear reactors in Saudi Arabia despite warnings. AP correspondent Chad Day reports.
Because of Flynn's past work on this, there was a conflict of interest. They also raised objections about whether or not they were following the safeguards within the Atomic Energy Act. In particular, they were saying that deciding on that we were going to transfer this technology to a foreign country is something that has to be approved by Congress, has to go through all of these other interagency processes. And according to these whistleblowers, those weren't being followed in the early days of the administration.
And that is AP correspondent Chad Day reporting, and this is VOA News. Redeployment of opposing forces in Yemen's civil war away from crucial seaports could begin within days, but humanitarian operations are at risk of running out of money in weeks. Humanitarian Chief Mark Lowcock told the meeting of the UN Security Council Tuesday they expect current resources to be used by the end of the month. The UN's coordinated aid operation in Yemen includes more than 250 operations. World Food Program is now feeding about 10 million Yemenis each month. Next Tuesday, Sweden and Switzerland are co-hosting a pledging conference in Geneva. President Trump says that he will prevail over a multi-state lawsuit challenging his emergency declaration to pay for a U.S.-Mexico border wall.
I have an absolute right to call national security. We need strong borders.
16 states, including California, New York, and Colorado, have filed a lawsuit alleging the declaration is unconstitutional. The Haiti Attorney General, Paul Enrons Villard, denied rumors Tuesday that he's being pressured to release eight men armed with the cache of weapons who were arrested Sunday by the national police. The arrest of the eight heavily armed men, one Haitian, two Serbs, and five Americans, shocked the nation already reeling from 10 consecutive days of protest and looting. They're facing legal weapons charges. Rumors are growing as to the men's motives, and Villard attempted to answer some of the many questions during a news conference. President Trump signed a directive Tuesday to outline the establishment of the Space Force as the newest branch of the U.S. military. Space Policy Directive 4 says the force will adapt U.S. national security to deter aggression and protect our interest in space. Last week, the Defense Intelligence Agency released a report that found China and Russia have taken steps to challenge the United States in space by developing weaponized satellites, energy weapons, and surveillance networks. U.S.-led coalition forces are warning the last remaining Islamic State fighters in Syria to surrender or die. Dozens of trucks appeared on the outskirts of the village of Baghouz Tuesday to evacuate any ISIS fighters who decide to give up along with their families. U.S. and Kurdish-led forces said they will attack after evacuating civilians there. But U.N. human rights officials said that they are concerned about the estimated 200 families holed up in Baghouz. They said IS fighters are actively preventing women and children from leaving the area. Thousands of people, including civilians and some suspected foreign fighters who joined IS, have streamed out of Baghouz in the past several weeks. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, February 20th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi and Somalia call for an urgent summit of countries contributing troops to the African Union mission in Somalia.
Since 2007, Burundi soldiers in Somalia have made the ultimate sacrifice. Somali people are grateful and will always remember for what you have done for Somalia.
Somali President Mohamed Farmajo, a leading Malawian presidential candidate, denies being offered millions of dollars to endorse incumbent President Mutharika. Liberia's Chief Justice denies a motion to recuse himself in the impeachment trial of an associate justice. And the brother of former Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma pays thousands of dollars in back taxes.
The tax aspect of this investigation is really a minute part of it. The main investigation itself is ongoing. That is an investigation into the actions of the National Telecommunications Company.
Francis Benkaifala is the head of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. A Zimbabwe lawyer representing protesters says he was attacked allegedly by a ruling party supporter. And Guinea-Bissau says tourism is rising, but how will it manage the development? Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi and Somalia are calling for countries contributing troops to the African Union mission in Somalia, known as AMISOM, to review the decision to withdraw its soldiers. The call came yesterday at the end of a two-day state visit to Burundi by Somali President Mohamed Farmajo. Moses Haviarimana reports from Bujumbura.
After a two-day working visit by the Somalia President Mohamed Farmajo to Burundi, where he met President Pierre Nkurunziza, the two heads of state agreed to call for an urgent summit of heads of state and government of the AMISOM troop contributing countries. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza said there is need to come to a common understanding with all AMISOM troop contributing countries. He says that there is a decision which was taken by the Peace and Security Council of the African Union, which Burundians didn't welcome, and that he knows Somalia wasn't pleased with it. The Burundian president said that's why they have called for an urgent summit so as the decision can be reconsidered. After a closed-door meeting between the two presidents, President Farmajo said that Burundi had greatly contributed in restoring peace and security in his country, and that as a result, the capital city, Mogadishu, was freed and liberated from Al-Shabaab by Burundian forces, Ugandan and Somali national forces.
Since 2007, Burundi soldiers in Somalia have made the ultimate sacrifice and assure the people of Burundi, your soldiers' sacrifices will not go in vain. Somali people are grateful and will always remember for what you have done for Somalia. I'm confident we will turn our security challenges into common progress and economic opportunity for our two people.
The visit comes a few weeks before the deadline of February 28th for Burundi to withdraw 1,000 troops from the AMISOM in Somalia, a decision that Burundi didn't welcome, arguing that the move contradicts the decision made earlier by the Coordination Committee in Somalia, which indicated that all troops from peace-contributing countries will start withdrawal by February this year. Burundi says that AMISOM troops be withdrawn on proportional basis from each of the five troop-contributing countries. Somalia president said that the visit will also strengthen the two countries' bilateral relation.
This historic visit will indeed strengthen our political and security cooperation to bring peace and stability in Somalia. Your government played a very significant role to contribute to peace and security in the region, and particularly the Burundi National Defense Force, who was one of the first countries to land in Somalia in 2009 and fought courageously against Al-Shabaab.
Burundi government receives $18 million from the African Union quarterly as compensation for the soldiers in the AMISOM mission. The country is expected to serve as the Peace and Security Council member for 3 years after being elected on February 8th, a move which the government believes has given its mission of not withdrawing the 1,000 troops a lifeline. Moses Aviarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
A leading Malawian presidential candidate denies he has been offered 5 billion kwacha, about a little over $400 million, to endorse incumbent President Peter Mutharika in the country's May 21st election. Local published reports say the family of former Malawian President Bakili Muluzi was offered the money by the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, in exchange for Atupile Muluzi, the former president's son, to withdraw from the presidential race and endorse incumbent President Mutharika. The younger Muluzi is the presidential candidate of the United Democratic Front Party, the UDF. He says bribery has no place in the UDF. To support him.
We have not been offered anything to that effect, and we've not accepted any payment nor bribe from the DPP to withdraw from the elections. Bribery does not have a domain in UDF, and I myself personally. And
I believe the question that the article raises is that one of the reasons they claim you are still in the president's cabinet and they don't understand, maybe there's something worked out and that's why you are still being maintained.
The whole claim is mere political propaganda and is coined by those that I believe are failed political elements who are dreading the rage of UDF fire ahead of the May 2019 elections. I have made it also very clear that my position as minister is extremely important for the stability, and it would be irresponsible for me to leave the ministry and the population without the support and stability that they require.
May I ask you, the elections are coming up in May, and there's a lot of movement among political parties, some of them talking about alliances. Are you thinking about supporting or joining any other party to form an alliance?
Well, the UDF is a very big party, and it is a party that is built on strong foundations of serving Malawi and the citizenry. And it remains our relentless zeal to jealously safeguard these pillars. Our wish is to serve Malawians from the many challenges facing them, and this can only be achieved if we assume the country's driving seat. I believe I have the experience to lead this country, and of course the UDF has the experience to be able to deliver a real transformation for our people.
You saw this part of the article that says that an agreement has been reached so that former President Bakili Muluzi will not be prosecuted. Did you see that?
I find this whole fabrication laughable and surprising. It is mere fabrication. And let me just also add that UDF is a very big institution and entity on the country's political arena. And my presentation of presidential nomination papers only 2 weeks ago only communicates the volumes about the party's intent to compete and not just participate in the May election. I'm also aware that there are political elements who are dreading the fact that the UDF is competing in the next elections, and they'll do anything to try to discourage us, to discourage our supporters, and of course to distract us as well from the weeks ahead and the months ahead that we have to the polls.
You said that the UDF is strong, it's a strong party. I mean, I asked you earlier about a possibility of alliance. Do you think the UDF, because it's strong, can go it alone?
I believe so, absolutely. I really do believe so. I'm very much in touch with the thinking of Malawians, and I think we are very well placed to poise a very strong challenge ahead of the next elections in a few weeks' time.
You are a cabinet minister. So what is it that you're going to present to Malawians to distinguish you from the government in which you work?
You've got to remember, we have been campaigning for the past 5-6 years as leader of the party on the issue of stability. We have been able to manage the stability in the last 4 and 5 years together. And we have demonstrated to Malawians that we can work together to build our country, provide stability, to restore credibility to the Malawi economy. And I think we have achieved a great deal.
Atupile Muluzi is the presidential candidate of the United Democratic Front Party of Malawi. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lee Longwe. Today is Wednesday, February 20th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. The Chief Justice of Liberia, Francis Kopoi, has denied a motion to recuse himself in the impeachment trial of Associate Supreme Court Justice Kabina Janet. Defense lawyers Monday called for the Chief Justice's recusal because they say he is conflicted to preside over the trial. But in his ruling denying the motion in the chambers of the Liberian Senate on Tuesday, Chief Justice Kopoi said the defense lawyers did not provide enough legal grounds for recusal.
As I've said time and again, it is not by my own doing, but by the dictates of the Constitution of Liberia that I should preside over this impeachment proceeding. The Constitution does not say who presides over impeachment proceedings involving the President, Vice President, or an Associate Justice in the absence of the Chief Justice, or when the Chief Justice is incapacitated or disqualified. Thus, as I see it, for me to recuse myself from performing the constitutional duty of presiding over an impeachment proceeding as the movement has requested of me, the movement must clearly establish legal and or factual grounds that partake of conflict of interest that will work to the injury of the movement by my presiding over the impeachment proceeding. The question then is, has the movement established any legal and or factual ground for me not to preside over this impeachment proceeding? The answer to me is no. The movement has not established that I have an interest in the impeachment trial or that I am related to any of the parties in the case. The movement has only contended that I participated in and signed a judgment in the concerned case along with three other justices. Therefore, I am, quote, conflicted. But if I deviated from the general rule in the concerned case, a fair and impartial proceeding would not be conducted when I preside over this impeachment trial involving him. I hold that I am not conflicted and I do not or did not deviate from the law in the concerned case to warrant my recusal from presiding over this impeachment proceeding. The motion to recuse is therefore denied and dismissed.
That was Francis Kopoi, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Liberia. In Sierra Leone, the brother of former President Ernest Bai Koroma has paid nearly $128,000 in back taxes in an out-of-court settlement with the Sierra Leone Anti-Corruption Commission. But critics say the commission should have delved deeper in Thomas Koroma's business dealings with the Sierra Leone government when it was led by his brother, former President Koroma. Francis Bai Ben Kai Fala, head of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission, says the tax expert is a minute part of the investigation. He says the main investigation into the action of the National Telecommunications Company continues.
We are investigating certain likelihood of corruption within the national telecommunications sector. Particularly, there was a building project which we believe that the process of awarding the contract and many things relating to that building project were itself done in a way that require our attention. And whilst we were doing so, we found out that contracts were awarded to the brother of the former president of the country. And on that contract, he was basically not paying tax. We confronted him with evidence and what he owes, and he admitted to owing it. And he entered into an agreement with the commission to pay back.
So the $127,547 is back taxes?
Yes, it's unpaid taxes. Tax avoidance is one of the mandates under the Anti-Corruption Act that we can investigate.
But, Mr. Chairman, would that be it for Mr. Thomas Koroma? Because the article says that some critics would like for your commission to go deeper in your investigation of Mr. Koroma's business dealings with the government that his brother headed, the former president of Sierra Leone.
Yes, of course, the tax aspect of this investigation is really a minute part of it. The main investigation itself is ongoing. That is an investigation into the actions of the National Telecommunications Company, and there are many actors involved. So it's definitely not the end of the matter. We are still continuing to probe deep into what happened at the NASCOM.
Are there other former government officials or business people that have done similar thing that Mr. Thomas Kuruma has done? Are they coming to your commission and offering to settle?
Yes, I mean, the commission has had several investigations that have happened within the past 7 months while I have been head of the Anti-Corruption Commission. And our recovery at the moment stands at about 11.5 billion yuns, which is like $1,500,000 within that period. Basically, when we investigate and we find out that you owe the country a certain amount of money, we take a judgment as to whether to pay back it is in the best interest of the country or we should prosecute you. We are trying to balance prosecution and recovery. So in respect of recovery, our recoveries are very high. We are recovering at a completely unprecedented rate for the country. But we are also prosecuting. Our conviction rates in court in terms of prosecutions currently stands at 100%.
I wonder what's the verdict so far from the Sierra Leone people about the way your commission has gone about doing its job.
People of Sierra Leone are very happy, particularly because we are gaining respectability within the international circles. The indices that are across the world are showing positive signs. We are moving upwards in most every index of the world. And the country itself, corruption perception has dropped from 70% where it was last year to 40% where it is. Last year, only 40% of the citizens believed in the fight against corruption. Here, there is 66% of the citizens believe in government efforts to fight corruption, according to Afrobarometer. We are succeeding on May, and we'll continue doing so. The people of Sierra Leone are very happy.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. We are so happy to always have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you.
Thank you.
Francis Benkafala is the head of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. A Zimbabwean lawyer who represents protesters were arrested by state security agents during recent public protests over the high cost of living in the country, says he was attacked yesterday in a magistrate's court in the Midlands capital, Gweru, by a man allegedly linked to the ruling ZANU-PF party. Brian Dube spoke with Gibbs Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe service.
I just had a sudden grip on my shoulder, on my collarbone to the right. Then I turned and found that the guy was holding me and he started to threaten me, saying I had pissed him off and he was going to deal with me. He was a powerful person. Then I asked him who he was. Then he said, since I did not know him, I was going to know him well. And that's when my colleague also intervened to say, what is your issue? And he started fuming and went and said that when the court started, we reported to the magistrate and eventually the court adjourned. At the adjournment, he actually followed us to where we were seated waiting to get back in court and he proceeded with the same threat. That's when he introduced himself saying he was a very senior lawyer and he was connected, he was going to deal with me. And eventually I reported to the police and to the law side. I became to then know that person to be Nomadai Chinook. I did not know him specially. I just heard about his name. It's being said to be the person who is coordinating the MPF matters against the MDC officials in Midland.
Brian Dube is a Zimbabwean lawyer based in the Midlands capital, Gweru. He spoke with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe service. But ZANU-PF Central Committee member, Belief Gaule, tells Gibbs Dube that Chinyoka may have acted on his own or was trying to impress President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who recently threatened to punish human rights doctors and lawyers.
I don't think that has anything to do with what the president said during his address at one of his rallies some few days ago. This has something to do with someone maybe who is trying to settle some scores, especially his enemies, especially the lawyer, and taking advantage maybe of what the president was saying. The president is own way of dealing with that kind of a situation whereby he talked of some people who really played a part in this demonstration that took place. And some people who really hijacked the agenda of any other people who wanted to demonstrate, to turn this thing into an ugly thing.
So, but at the end of the day, if a president makes such utterances, I guess there are some people who can end up doing some of these things. Is it not the case, Mr. Kaule?
It's very true. It happens because some people at times would want to appear as if they are doing the right thing. Let's say if someone knows that the very somebody was involved maybe in doing ABCD during those days, someone then come in and take advantage of that.
Believe Gaule is a member of the ruling ZANU-PF's Central Committee. He spoke with Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe's service. Tourism is on the rise in Cape Verde, but how will they manage the development? Philippe Duzile, a hotel consultant with Hogwarts Group's France and West Africa department, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the reasons behind the growth and the potential pitfalls.
What's happening today is that Egypt or Turkey or the rest of North African destination, perhaps with the exception of Morocco, are challenged. And Cape Verde is within the same range, offering a new destination with nice weathers, unspoiled beaches, and very attractive prices. So all this combined could explain the success of Cape Verde as the new resort destination, active all year round for European holidaymakers.
Do you have any statistics about how many more visitors Cape Verde has seen in the last couple of years compared to years prior years?
Cape Verde is recording a double-digit growth over past years because of the development of air connection and a very, very solid growth national lodging census there, as many, many rooms are opening and many tour operators are putting Cape Verde on top of their list of favorite destinations.
What are some of the challenges to the tourism industry in Cape Verde?
It's all about tourism in islands, you know. That's a very mono-oriented destination, 100% a position on sand and beach tourism. I would say the destination is very appealing as it is today because it's not overdeveloped. And the risk that could be ahead is to have too many hotels. So a destination is something very fragile, but if they are clever enough to master the development and to keep the quality at the right point and stay away from overdevelopment, I think there's a real green light ahead for Cape Verdean tourism for the next decade.
Even you mentioned the potential hazard of overbuilding. What about the interaction between tourism growth and the environment? Because as we all know, Cape Verde's environment is an ecosystem. It is, you know, it's quite untouched. So there is that danger, I would think, to overdevelopment.
Yeah, you're right. This is absolutely the point. If you compare, for instance, to the terrible images that has been broadcasted about the Maldives and the way they were treating their waste, that was terrible, and I think it really shocked the tourism community at the global scale. So how will they be treating the waste? How they will be managing water and sanitization, but also recycling grey waters? All this is really part of the challenge, and this is definitely a point that Cape Verde needs to look at very carefully.
That was Philippe Duzilet, hotel consultant with Hogwarts. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Paris. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Burundi and Somalia are calling for countries contributing troops to the African Union mission in Somalia to review Burundi's decision to withdraw its soldiers. The call came yesterday at the end of a two-day state visit to Burundi by Somali President Mohamed Farmajo. The Chief Justice of Liberia, Francis Kolpoy, has denied a motion to recuse himself in the impeachment trial of Associate Supreme Court Justice Kabina Janet. Defense lawyers Monday called for the Chief Justice's recusal because they said he is conflicted to preside over the trial. And in Sierra Leone, the brother of former President Ernest Bai Koroma has paid nearly $128,000 in back taxes. And that's it for this Wednesday, February 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Stray Dog Africa, we'll discuss the results of the February 16th Nigerian presidential and National Assembly elections. What concerns and issues swayed the voters the most? An in-depth discussion on the Nigerian elections on the next Stray Dog Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa. Hello, this is Peter Clote of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily report when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.